Morning. Good
Hi.
morning. Hey, how you doing? Look at those braces.
Oh my God.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome back to another episode of The Break Room. I call it The Break Room because I feel like we all need to stop, take a break, and reflect before we keep pushing. Now, pardon my voice because I'm battling some spring allergies and a sore throat. First of all, sore throats are one of the worst things that can happen to your body. I can't stand sore throats. But anyway, I'm here with my lovely wife, Miss Kia. How are you?
Thank you for the introduction. I'm doing just fine. And I just want to say, I was originally your first guest, but I wasn't prepared for that because I wasn't re like, I didn't know that you were actually going to take this and like turn it into like a video podcast.
I'm a jack of all trades and I'm a loose cannon,
Yeah, but I
so.
was a loose cannon on that. Mike, I was in my most natural state.
That was us freestyling. That was us freestyling. We weren't sure yet.
Yeah, but nah, but I was DMX with the freestyle. I was
Max, shout out to all the ball heads out
R.I.P.
there. Shout out to all the ball heads.
So what's up? So you wanted me to come on because you wanted to discuss some things with me, right?
Yeah, we've been having some conversations lately about varying topics, some crazy, some nutty, some make you scratch your head. And I think we want to go over it. But first and foremost, I just want to ask you, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm all right. I'm happy to be off right now. A lot going on, just like personally, and just, trying to figure out, what's the next step for me. I did want to say before we begin to record that, like, I'm so happy that you're back and recording and doing this because you show how the range that you have, how you're such a great conversationalist, and you're able to speak to different people from all walks of life and make them feel comfortable, right? And I think that that's one of your strong suits, your natural ability to kind of play that role of a I can adapt, I can speak to different people. You're very diplomatic. That's what it is.
Shout out to Cam.
That's your Aquarius moon and Aquarius rising. You got it wrong
Boy.
in the wrong podcast.
What are the ice, Aquarius moon? That's okay. Yes. Listen,
But your son is a Scorpio.
I don't understand this hieroglyphics. Yo, it's damn near 5% of 5% of logic. Yo, son, I feel like right here you talk about it, it's like Raekwon talking to me. It's like, yo, son, you
In
see your
today's
square.
mathematics,
You see,
God.
son, see your square is off, son, with your moon rising. I'm like, no division. I still barely know fractions. He trying to get me to
Yo.
learn, like, whatever.
And
But
as you can see, since we recorded, I got braces, and this is the absolute worst thing. Like, I only did it honestly because literally they told me, "Oh yeah, we need to correct your bite. If not, you're gonna lose one of your teeth." And I was like, "Oh nah, oh nah." And the thing is that I'm a child. I am not disciplined enough to have Invisalign because if you give me the option to take it off, I'm going to keep it off.
well, go ahead.
So I had to get these barbed wire in my mouth. But I'm only doing it for a year, thank God, just to correct the bite. I don't really have messed up teeth. It's just my bite. I'm putting a lot of pressure. Yeah, but anyways, go ahead.
You've been not enjoying the braces since you first got them in.
I've been complaining every day.
You've been complaining daily. You've been expressing how annoying they are. But just so I know why, and I know you've been telling me, but for the people out there, what is it about braces that's annoying you?
Well, every time you speak, it brushes against your gums, right? The inside of your mouth, right? Or you eat. And then you have to brush your teeth at least 3 times a day because when you eat, especially like if you're outside, everything gets caught. The food all gets caught in the braces. So you got to put your finger in there and play. And you're there like 30 minutes. Just,
My God.
it's so uncomfortable, guys.
My God.
And then like when you sleep, if you sleep on, if you're a side sleeper like me, like it's rubbing against the gums. And now there's people that are like, it's not that uncomfortable. You just need to get the wax and put it over the braces. I'm like, hold on. Because then when you eat, the wax get caught with the food. So you're eating food and wax.
It just,
Like it's mad uncomfortable. Like this is terrible.
You know, it's funny. I've been told over the years that dental health is important.
Very.
And I would hear it, but whatever. But then recently, like a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, my dentist was like, yo, you have slight gum disease and you need injections, actual injections in your gums,
Yeah.
strong needles to inject some silicone or something in it to quell it or heal it. So for the past few months, I've been going to the dentist every few months and getting actual long needles, doing each shot, like shots, actual shots on each side. I can't tell you I can't describe how painful it is. I'm just like, what the fuck is the point of this? Like, I'm like, you know what? I want to be an old man already. Just give me fake teeth.
Oh my God, no.
By the way, I was gonna say, by the way, yo, one of the newer trends in cosmetic world that is very weird to see is the cats who are getting like, the dudes who are getting those veneers.
The veneers.
Those bright ass veneers.
Now, I have seen good veneers. The problem is a lot of people out here are not getting the good veneers.
I've never seen a good veneer. I don't know what it looked like.
I've seen some really good veneers.
The veneers?
But these dudes be getting the ultra white, like glow in the dark veneers.
It's like Times Square in your mouth.
It's like, yo, it's like chiclets. Or they get the teeth are too big for the mouth. So they look like I do right now with braces.
It's like a bunch of dentine gums just stacked up on in their jaw. I'm like, what are we doing here? What are we doing?
You could tell like the teeth are not well separated. So they look like they blended in and it looks like one big ass tooth. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. It throws me off. It's just whenever, like Nori, I think, you know, shout out to Nori. We love you, Nori.
We love you. Love you. Drink champs all day.
I don't do hard liquor, but love you. But yeah, when I saw him recently with it, I was like, oh my God. And then mind you, speaking of Nori and cosmetics, another thing that's going on lately is the turkey joint, the hair transplant.
By the way, Mike, I don't want you to get any ideas. I love you for the way that you are. You are rocking that bald head. You look beautiful.
I'm way too frugal for a hair transplant. It's not that expensive. I hear that people say, oh, they take care of your hotel. They book you, all that stuff. I hear all the works about it. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. But I'm actually marveled by the science of it all. Because someone told me the other day, I'm like, what do you do? Like, they shave the back of your head and they take those hairs and they implant it. I'm like, wow. But I'm just like, Is it that serious?
I mean, listen, I look at it like this, right? Not everybody has luxurious, beautiful skin like you, Mike. Like, you are blessed. You can rock a bald head. But there's a lot of dudes that got either funny shaped heads or they're like really, really light and they look like Mr. Clean with a bald head, or they got like the weird shadow on. Like, it depends, you know? And there's just some guys that they just want the hair because the hair is attached to you.
Yeah, well, chasing youth is a silly game, in my opinion. I think you should embrace your age and your wisdom. So, you know, I don't get it. But
I'm all for embracing age and wisdom, but I'm also pro plastic surgery. Like, I feel like if you want to get something nipped and tucked to feel better, do it. But you should also be evaluated for body dysmorphia before you start doing all this plastic surgery. Because a lot of people, they take it way too far. I'm not going to say any names, but there's a certain artist from the Bronx. Yo, she's gone way too overboard with the plastic surgery.
Man, soon she'll look like Miss Kim from the Chinese store or something.
Like, yo, I will take a 1996 Little Kim over a lot of like what women do to their bodies now.
Well, I'm an actual Miss Kim or Miss Chin or someone from the Chinese store.
I know what you mean.
I know. I mean, yeah.
Like, yo, a 1996 Little Kim.
Oh, man, beautiful.
Was fly.
She was chocolate.
And I wish she knew how fly she was at that time. Like, right there, that a little petite. Yo, that's another thing. Like, obviously, big girls get body shamed often. I mean, we see what people do to Lizzo, for example. But we also need to stop body shaming, like, the petite girls. Like, petite is cute, too.
Sure.
And now, I'm also a fan of, like, the little titty club. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't need to have these big, huge boobs. Like, it's okay if you're small and you have small titties.
The little titty club. All right. Yeah, it's growing up in the 80s and 90s, especially watching media. You know, you would see girls be, you know, little chest, and it didn't bother you, just like their beauty, however they look. I will say this, though. A lot of guys will admit to this, and I have. And I was talking to a friend about this the other day. When you're young, when you're a young man, and you're like in your adolescence, you look at chest.
Mm-hmm.
You look at chest. And then once you hit like 19, 20 years old, you're like, oh, there's a backside you got to look at too. Okay. So like there is that aspect to men, but ultimately beauty is beauty, skin deep. Or it's within side. But I'm glad you mentioned Lizzo because I have a little rant, not rant, but a little thing I want to say. There's a lot of dudes out there or people in general, not just dudes, who are saying, Liz lost weight. She lost weight. So did she really love herself when she was big? Did she really love herself? God. Was she preaching that for real? Or was that just like fake pride? I'm like, you guys are unhappy SOBs.
Yes.
Listen, just because someone is happy within themselves when they're big doesn't mean they don't acknowledge their health issues. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can walk and talk. You can walk and chew gum at the same time. Like, you know what I'm saying? And you can celebrate getting healthier.
To add to that, I also want to say, I don't think Lizzo was ever celebrating obesity. I think what she was saying is like, yes, I know I'm a big girl, but I'm still happy in my skin. And you shouldn't judge me or make fun of me because of the way that I look. A lot of people look like me. Now, it is also true that it's harder to continue being overweight as you age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, absolutely. I can say that from personal experience. Okay, not that it's right, but you can weigh 250 when you're 25. It is very difficult to weigh 250 at 40 years old for a woman I'm talking about. It is very difficult. You feel it in your energy. You feel it in your sleep. Like, you can't sleep.
Going up steps.
You feel it in also like when you're walking, you get tired easily. Like, you eventually need to shed weight. And the older you get, the leaner you kind of want to become, because you're also decreasing muscle mass. So it's literally harder to carry the weight as you get older.
I agree. And, you know, this past fall, from like September to, I want to say November, I was losing weight because I had changed my habits. So in the mornings, I was eating boiled eggs. Every morning. And then I was having lean lunches, and it was natural. I wasn't like hyper focused on it, but I knew for a fact I was eating boiled eggs just for the hell of it daily. And I was shedding weight at a crazy rate, I wasn't used to for a long time. So much so that a coworker of mine was like, yo, Mike, are you losing weight? I said, I think I am. And she was like, do you mean to lose weight? And when she said that, I said, fuck, hopefully it's not something serious. Because, you know, nowadays you go to webmd.com when you feel like you have a symptom. And your mind goes crazy.
Yeah, and that's like the worst thing you could do, right?
Yeah, because your mind goes crazy. Like, you have something. So I said, yo, I got nervous one weekend because the weight was really like dropping, like at least 15 pounds I had lost, and in a short time span. So I was so nervous about the weight loss that I was going through. And mind you, I was doing the work. I was doing good work with it, with nutrition. I was still so nervous. I sabotaged myself one weekend just to see if it was for real. I said, you know what? On a Friday night, I said, you know what? Let me eat terrible this weekend and see if I'm still going to lose weight. If I lose weight on Monday or Tuesday, that means there is something wrong with me and I should go get checked out. But if I gain weight or stay the same, I'm okay. What did I do? I pigged out the whole weekend. I ate terrible, terrible food. Food that I hadn't eaten in a long time. And come Monday morning, I definitely gained weight. Like an asshole. Now I can't lose that experiment weight that I gained. I'm like, fuck, I should have just stayed on my grizzly and just do my thing.
You know,
thing.
It's interesting. Often find, you know, growing up big, you know, you definitely feel it because you're getting those microaggressions from a very young age. And you see how people get treated. Like, I hate to break it to some people. I know you want to live in an idealistic world, not you per se, but people watching this. You want to live in an idealistic world where, no, everybody gets treated the same. No, you don't. People absolutely get treated depending on how they look. And that's a big person. You learned that early, right? But I also want to acknowledge that I've seen that a lot of women that grew up very small or even like average size most of their lives, and then as they get older, they gain weight. Being big is a lot harder to accept because you also are aware, like, damn, like, I was this at one point and now I'm big. And you probably also grew up kind of being discriminatory against big people, and now you're a big person.
Absolutely. I've seen.
So that's why, like, for me, like, I've been big all my life. So for me, it's like, whatever, like, you know, like, it's not a big deal. But for people that did not grow up big, they take it a lot harder. They're a lot more, I see it, like, in the way they carry themselves. Like, they're a lot more
less confident,
self-conscious, you know, very, like, they cover up themselves. I'm like, man, listen.
Yeah. I've seen that, too. And mind you have lost weight in the last 5 years. And I wonder how people are treating you in retrospect.
Like, do you want to know something, Mike? I feel like people, I come across as happier to people. I come across as more easygoing now that I'm, I know, right? Can you believe that? No, I can honestly say that I have gone through the most severe depression and the most severe self-doubt within the last 5 years than I ever did before. Now, is that directly connected to my weight loss? I think some of it does.
How so?
Yeah, because I think that when you lose a lot of weight, remember, food has always been my addiction. Like, and in a way, I thank God that food is my addiction, because I know how, what an addictive personality I can have. Yep. Pookie. Like, if no, seriously, I would have been Pookie in New Jack City, by the way. Shout out to New Jack City.
It just keeps calling me, man. It just keeps calling me.
But instead of crack, it's cookies.
Yeah.
But anyways,
if we found out there was crack inside Crumble cookies, I'd be like, I knew you guys had crack.
First of all, I want to say, unpopular opinion, Crumble is overrated. And some of the cookies are better. But anyways, I feel like I'm way more self-conscious now. And I've gone through serious depression. But is that correlated to my weight loss? Some of it is. I mean, I did have a child. I absolutely did experience postpartum depression. It was really, really bad. I've also gone through like a change in career that's really affected my mental state. Like, there's a lot of things that have contributed to it, but I think the weight loss has also contributed to, like, the altered mind state that I have. But it is interesting to watch how people now, they think, like, oh, you're much happier. Like, you're more easygoing. I'm like, no, I'm the exact same person. I'm dealing with darker demons now, mentally, than I did before. You crazy? There's thoughts that I've had now that I never thought as a bigger person.
You mentioned postpartum depression, so I want to get to that a little bit, because I want you to illustrate that for other women out there who may be watching or non-mothers. But before we get into that, I want to ask you, because as a guy, there was fat shaming growing up. I mean, I'm my most heaviest as far as chunky now. When I was growing up, I was way more active, just running around, riding my bike, playing ball every day. So I would eat a lot, but I would always shed weight because of activity. So I was always like, you know, I was chubby. They would call me Chubby Cheeks. But I wasn't like heavy. Now I'm like really like chunky. But I want to say, what do you think is the cause of people to fat shame? And why do you think people fat shame?
Well, it's very easy. You know, being fat is being considered ugly. And I think that sometimes people, in order to make themselves feel better, they want to step on somebody that's smaller than them. Even though technically when you're fat, you're not smaller than people. But anyways. People like to make themselves feel better, right? So, you know, like, it's the same thing with anything, with any group of people that is oppressed, right? Like, I'm pretty sure, like, within, like, the Black community, let's say maybe darker-skinned women had a harder time than light-skinned women. Let's say that's just an example, right? Or, like, shorter men have much harder time than taller men, right?
Yeah, they do.
Like, that's just what it is. And because fat is associated with ugliness, you know, unfortunately, you know, we're a target, and nothing is funnier than a fat joke, especially and I also feel like being fat is like the most acceptable form of like a bullying. Like people will be like, no, don't make fun of her skin tone. Don't make fun of his height. Oh, but you can make fun of her fatness. It's fine, because it's like you choose to be fat.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't respect.
Instead of recognizing it like, oh no, this is actually a disease and it's messed up that I'm living during this time, because people really truly still don't understand it. But it is a disease. It is a mental disease. It is.
You could be at Thanksgiving dinner with a coked out cousin who has every addiction in the world. But you come over, he'll be like, you fat nigga. And his mother will be like, well, you aren't fat.
Like, yeah, by the way, you're accurately describing my personal family, by the way.
It's like,
but yeah, definitely. Is the most acceptable form of bullying. But that made me have tough skin. It made me have a great sense of humor as an adult, right? Because I've heard every fat joke. So now it's like, okay, like, oh, let's crack on each other then. Let's see who's funnier.
Yeah. I agree. Yes, I agree with you. I mean, like, as a man, it was easier, I guess, because I guess men aren't as harsh at times as being dealt with ridicule as women are. Women are dealt with a lot more ideas of looks and perception and attraction. Mm-hmm. So it hits them harder.
I'm going to pivot this conversation slightly, because we're going to talk. I wanted to bring this up, right? But it's unrelated. You know, one of the reasons why Yolanda Saldívar, who murdered Selena in 1995, right? Who, in my opinion, should still be in jail.
Really?
Yes.
We'll get into that.
Should still be in jail.
But
one of the reasons why I really, like, see why people really don't like her, aside from the fact that she killed Selena unjustifiably, she feeds into that whole, she's the old, ugly, fat lady that killed the really, really pretty girl. And it feeds into the stereotype of like, oh, fat bitches are haters. And it really feeds into that psyche of, yeah, you know, fat women are miserable. Fat women are jealous. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons, yo, psychologically, why people really dislike her. Listen, Selena was great. Selena was an icon on the rise. Selena made in the short time that she was here, she made a cultural impact, but she also benefited from being exceptionally beautiful. And allegedly, but at this point, it doesn't even matter because she was a baddie, right? But the fact that Yolanda killed her, aside from the fact that she was also like one of her closest friends and confidants, you know, Yolanda, because of the way that she looks, she feeds into that damn stereotype.
Yeah.
That I never can't even stand. Like, go ahead.
No, I hate her. Open up on something that I never even thought about, the idea.
Of course.
And maybe you had more cultural context to that because you are a woman, so you have these conversations more upfront and you've seen it more. I never thought about the idea that women, big women, are perceived to be haters.
Of course. What?
What? I've never seen that. I never heard about that.
Mike, do you want to know something? And I'm sorry that I'm using the words fat bitches. It's just I am saying it the way a lot of you that are listening refer to as big women.
Because
let's keep it real. That's how y'all call a lot of big women. That's straight up and down. I'm not a PC type of person. I'm going to say what it is. But Mike, one of the biggest reasons why I feel like I was a people pleaser growing up is because I was combating that stereotype. Because it's always even in my family, I have cousins that truly believe that I envy them because of the way that they look. Little do they know that I wouldn't want their lives even if you paid me.
Right.
Because it's that whole, yeah, you want to be like me. You're miserable within yourself because you look like that. Yes. People think like that, Mike. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I had a cousin who was 3 years older than me. Always jacked. Trapezoids, everything just muscle built. But whenever I would go see him, I always felt more confident than him. I always felt more assured of myself than him. He would call me chubby cheeks and try to mess with me. But I'm like, nigga, you lame. I see how you move. I see how you talk to girls. I see what you need. I'm like, no, you lame.
And even like on a deeper level, maybe I don't know if I've shared you with this, but people were even surprised, like when we got married, right? And people were kind of like, wow, how did you land a guy like him? Insinuating. I mean, you're a wonderful human being. And by the way, everybody, like, literally bowed down to you for your birthday gift.
These lashes? This year. See these lashes?
That's right. Luxurious, baby. Let's go. Like, everybody bowed down to you for my birthday gift this year. They were like, oh, my God, Mike is so creative. That's wonderful. I love it. He gifted me a personalized book for my birthday, which is beautiful. And I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
For all you bilingual people.
But anyways, if people insinuated like, wow, how did you, you know, meet a guy like him? Like if I didn't like deserve or like it's such a surprise.
What did you want? What did you want for her?
You know what it is, Mike? People already put you in a box. People put people in boxes. And when you do something outside of that box, it's like, oh, that's different. No, bitch. That's different for you. Okay? That's for you. But you don't get to define who I am.
People don't like to see the fat friend elevate.
Exactly.
They don't like that.
Don't let the fat friend get the fine guy because the hate and the real things are going to come out.
I remember like 20 some odd years ago. I remember... A friend of mine, he knows who he is. He had another friend who I was cordial with, but he was close with that guy too. And that guy was getting frustrated because the mutual friend was starting to hang out with me more because we just connected and we were air likes. And he told the mutual friend, what are you hanging out with Mike for? Do he get bitches? How he get bitches? How he get bitches? Do he get bitches?
Showing his true colors. He was hating on the low.
You know, I was like, man, if the measure of your friendship with him is going out and getting chicks, then obviously you don't know your brother as much as you think you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's one. For two, at that time, I'm married obviously now, but at that time, I was doing just fine, brother. But a lot of guys, a lot of people are very minimal in their connectivity to the world. They think it's just looks. They think it's just presentation, but they don't care about spirituality. They don't care about themselves. They don't care about connecting with something deeper than surface level. So, you know, I felt bad for him. I felt pity for him. Like, wow, he's really backwards, huh? He's really thinking about just surface stuff all day long.
And you were smart and also not personalizing that, because you were like,
I pitied him.
This ain't even about me. This is more about you and how you view things.
I pitied him. I said, damn, he's still in second grade.
But because I brought up Selena, I thought you said you had a hot take about that.
I have two hot takes about Selena. The first one.
First of all, be careful.
No. It ain't about her as a person. Okay. First of all, come on left floor. My throat sucks. Pause.
Hey, yo.
My throat is in a terrible, damn, how can I say it? My throat is under the weather.
Okay.
And I need tea. But yo, come on left floor. But, yeah, I love
Selena. Okay, right.
You know what I mean? My thing, my Selena, two things. One, the movie was awesome. J-Lo did a great job. Everybody did a great job. But even back then when I watched it, I was like, didn't she just die? Didn't she just pass away? Why just movie? A movie takes years of production sometimes. It takes scripts being passed around. You know, Clint Eastwood, when he did Unforgiven in 1993, he waited 20 years to age a certain way, to look that part, to do it. Sometimes movies take a long time to come into production and to be written as a script and finalized. She died in 95. The movie was out in 97. That always...
Exactly 2 years to the date that she died, too.
And I was like, did y'all grieve? Did y'all grieve this out? What's going on?
You know, I think that definitely her family has been criticized for being a little bit like, I don't want to say exploitative, but...
I don't want to say that either, but I just feel
comfortable. They've done series after documentary after album. They really like oiled this well of
machine, yeah. And
I get it. Like, listen, Selena is a cultural icon, you know, like I get it, you know, but
it's not my place to tell people how to move on and to grieve and how to celebrate a life. So let me humble myself in saying that. But I felt weird. So that's my first hot take. Sorry for my voice, y'all. My second hot take is, it's been almost 30 years since Yolanda was convicted and imprisoned.
Oh, man.
I do wonder in the spirit of you know, healing and what's it called when the prisoner is like gone through the motions of learning their ways. There's a word for it.
It's, rehabilitated?
Rehabilitated. There you go. Look at you. SAT words. who taught you octagon?
Who taught you octagon?
You see, my brother, the rehabilitation of the Haitian nation with no constipation.
For the Emancipation Proclamation.
I'm going to the bathroom to emancipate my constipation.
Hold on, I gotta hit.
So with that being said, I do wonder when is enough as far as prison.
Man, literally.
And when do we say, okay, you are welcome back into society. We will give you another try at life. And go at it. Now remember, this is Texas. Even if she comes, this is Texas, so you're not lasting long in the streets.
You're not gonna believe this. I literally just had this conversation with a friend of mine on IG, which, by the way, who is Mexican, and I'm not gonna blow you up because I'm gonna protect your identity. But yo, he said it in a less eloquent way than you did. No. Don't do that. Yo. He said, if Selena, in a nice way, I'm going to say it in a better way, if Selena would have been, let's say, like an unhoused person in the street and she would have been killed, Yolanda would have been out by now. I said, well, look, I believe in fairness and I believe in a better world, but I also live within the rules of now. And the reality is that this world does treat some people different than others.
Privilege.
If you kill a cultural icon, you are going to probably die in jail. Let me give you an example. John Lennon, who was the lead singer of the Beatles, he got killed in New York City in 1980 by Mark David Chapman. Mark David Chapman has been denied parole 13 times and is still in jail 45 years later.
Okay. Still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive.
Is that right?
I think that, listen, Yolanda Kilselina, who was a huge cultural icon, she did it in the state of Texas, which is one of the harshest states. And Selena's family's still alive. Best believe they were there at the parole hearing. Like, nah. I just think that, unfortunately, she killed the wrong person. It's kind of like when you shoot a cop, you know you're about to, like, you threw your life away.
Your life is over.
It's a wrap.
Whenever I get into a conversation with people about criminal justice reform and just having a conversation about prison reform, I always try to be a liberal and progressive and preach in how, like, we should try to reinvite citizens or ex-cons into society and rehabilitate them and bring them back to the workforce. But I always add the addendum to play devil's advocate that, yo, what if it was my sister? Knock on wood. What if it was my mother? Knock on wood. What if it was anybody in my life, knock on wood? How would I feel then?
I believe in fairness. I just also don't think that it helps Yolanda's case to go on a documentary that she did recently and pretty much being like, well, Selena got aggressive with me and I had to defend myself.
Yeah, no.
That doesn't help either. Because you're pretty much saying the bitch had it coming. Exactly. So if you're also taking that stance and you don't seem remorseful, that's also not going to help your case.
By the way, Yolanda is like a top five old lady Latin name. But yeah, she wilded out. And yeah, she'll be dying in prison probably.
And now March 31st is also the day that Nipsey Hussle got murdered. Which to me, you know, the West, one of my unpopular opinions, and I don't care, I'll say it. The West Coast loves to big up Tupac. First of all, Tupac was born and raised in New York most of his life. Let's just go there.
I went to high school in Baltimore.
All right? He's from Harlem. Let me just say that.
Yes, he is. Yes,
so
he
y'all
is.
Be bigging him up like, oh, Tupac, West Coast. Nah. Okay? Nipsey is the person that is born and raised in L.A. That's L.A. to the core. He's the guy that should be upheld the way y'all uphold Tupac, straight up and down. And his death to me is sadder.
It's more tragic.
It's way more tragic. This man got killed in LA by another black man. Okay? And this man was trying to progress his community. Like, what happened to Nipsey is one of the biggest injustices to me. It's way more controversial than a lot of the hip-hop deaths that I've seen.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, Tupac was engaging in violence. So what happened to him afterwards, it's almost like, well, violence begets violence. So if you stomp somebody out in public, they're going to riot. They're going to riot, especially if they're gang members and you're claiming a gang yourself.
Mind you, he wasn't even you a Black Panther or you a gay member? What are you? He was a little bit confused, but he's a Gemini. So Geminis, I always say never take them seriously because they're natural trolls. Who else is a Gemini? Well, Kanye.
Oh, man.
Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few of them.
There's a few of them. I don't take them serious. But anyways, it's not about Tupac. It's about Nip.
No, it's not about Tupac. Yeah, Nip was more tragic because you saw his willingness to progress, you know? You saw his willingness to move on and push forward. He had the STEM program. He had the stores. He bought the block, the mall that he got killed at. He bought that to influence businesses, to bring a new business. He was forward thinking. He was
for the community.
He was for his community. He was trying to show another way. Not just a black man killed him, but it's a tragedy about gang violence. His own gang member, Rolling 60s member, killed him.
It is being alleged.
Allegedly, a member of his own quote unquote set murdered him, which shows you on another level how gang activity
is destructive.
It's destructive and nonsensical. There's no point in doing gang activity and claiming a set when they'll kill you, when your own people will kill you. You know what I'm saying? So it was very, I remember that day like it was yesterday. It was a Sunday.
Of course.
It was Sunday. I think it was you who yelled it to me, or I don't know how I heard it, but.
We were laying down. We were in Pelham Parkway on the sofa. We were watching TV. And we just see this on Twitter pop up like Nipsey Hussle just got shot in L.A. And we were like, what? yo, my heart dropped. And then hours later, it was confirmed that he passed.
It reminded it reminded me of Carlito's Way with Al Pacino, where a man finally turns over a new leaf and is about to experience progress and positivity in his life. He's trying to get out, but one last time, the streets got him, and got him for good. And you know, it's just terrible. It's terrible. So whenever this day comes, March 30th, you know, I always say a prayer for him and his family. Mind you, the album he just released before that, it was amazing to me. I loved it. It was finally a all put together piece of work to present. And it was good times. Like, you felt proud of him. Like, damn, I saw his journey and he came a long way. And just like that, hate can take over. Hate, by the way, in my opinion, is stronger than love, it seems, our society.
Unfortunately, hate brings people together more than love. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
I also want to say, hot take, Carlito's Way is not a good movie. However, Sean Penn's performance is amazing.
I hope it's a good movie, but I know
it's not a good movie.
I enjoy it a little more than Scarface.
I don't think they're comparable.
Maybe his performance then. Maybe his performance, I'm saying. But
Sean Penn's performance is the best performance though.
Oh yeah, yeah. With that Jewish fro and the balding head. Yeah, yeah. That's funny. That's iconic. But yeah, rest in peace, Nipsey. Rest in peace, Selena.
Yeah, rest in peace, man. And I just want to say, like, not to get into, like, the whole indictment with the RICO and everything that's going on over there. You know, the rumor is, this is a big alleged, is that this was not an accident. This was actually a hit.
Right.
Allegedly. You know, these are some things that people have actually alleged in different interviews. And apparently that the person that sent out a hit was the person that actually used to, like, manage him.
Yes, he's
years up. Before.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was somebody that was very influential in LA, and also apparently the same person extorted a lot of other people when they came to LA to check in, which, by the way, the whole check-in situation.
Terrible. You got to check in.
It's extortion. And by the way, you're only doing it to other people that look like you. You're trying to oppress other people that look like you because you ain't telling Leonardo DiCaprio to check in.
Steven Spielberg, check in.
Steven Spielberg, check in.
Bill Gates, check in.
Check in. You feel me?
Exploitive. I mean, you know, 100 years ago, 80 years ago, in an Italian community, you know, you have some mafiosos who would go to a poor man with a pizza shop, a poor man with a bread shop. And say, are you here now? Now you got to pay me to be in the... It's like, what are we doing?
Dana White has talked about how he was tried to be extorted by the Irish mafia, I believe, in Boston when he opened a business back in the day. And he had closed his business the next day. He was like, nah, fuck that. Like,
nah. Why? Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Mind you, he exploits UFC fighters, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole checking in culture is terrible. First of all, to the people who feel like they got to check in, why are you even going to certain neighborhoods to begin with? What's the obsession?
People want to feel like I'm down.
What's the obsession of going to certain neighborhoods?
I'm real. I'm not scared. I'm about this life. No, I'm not about this life. I'm in this hotel in the Beverly Hills.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm watching Jay Springer on my hotel bed.
That's Maureen. You are not the father.
Where Jay Leno's ready for me? David Letterman's ready for me? All right, I'm coming downstairs. But other than that, what am I doing?
It's all a trap, Mike. It's all a trap.
Say this, though. I will say to the gangsters, to the criminal elements who feel like they got to make people check in, what if there's like an old lady with a nice soul food restaurant in the middle of the neighborhood? I got to check in with you just to take my kids to an iconic restaurant. It's like, what? Like, how far are we exploiting our people just to have a good time in a certain neighborhood? At some point, get a job. Get a fucking job.
But some people know they feel better by making other people work for them and oppress them.
Yeah, I agree.
So rest in peace to Selena and to Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah. One more thing about Nipsey Hussle, because he used to read a book and called The Spook Who Sat by the Door, and he would preach that book. And me and my friend, shout out to David, we always had this joke, the CIA in the 80s, the CIA implanted drugs into the community, crack cocaine. You had the Iran-Contra thing where the government was selling cocaine through drug dealers to fund the Nicaragua war and get arms to Iran. So me and my friend had this joke. The CIA won. They won. The idea of destabilizing the black community, black and brown community, they won. They're winning this game. It's a blowout right now.
So for those that are not familiar with the story, I'm just going to read a little Summary is a novel that uses the story of a Black CIA operative, Dan Freeman, to explore themes of revolution, racial oppression, and the hypocrisy of the ruling class, urging marginalized communities to take action and fight for their rights.
Right, right. And that's like, it's an iconic book. I think they made a movie out of it too, but it's iconic.
Yes.
And ultimately, the CIA, they are Tom Brady right now. They're whooping our ass.
Yeah, and let me tell you, one of the biggest reasons I'm going to say, and I'm going to be very specific, right? And I know there's a lot of people that are going to be like, well, Kia, you might not be able to speak on this, but I can speak on this from an outsider looking in, respectfully. You know what's one of the biggest issues that I've seen is that in certain, specifically what I see here in like the Black community is like the okayness with having a broken family.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Go ahead. We'll keep going.
I know that that's controversial, but in no other community is that okay.
Yes, I agree.
And that has nothing to do with because you're genetically disposed to it. No, it's because this is how bad the oppression has affected the community. There's been so many things that have been done to get you to this point. But yo, this is why, not for nothing, I kind of fucks with Dr. Umar. I really do. Because he champions the Black family. He's like, yo, Black brothers, take Black women and keep it together. Don't be out here just spreading the seed like crazy. Even though he himself, you know, he's not married. And he has multiple baby mamas, but let's not even go there.
Right, right, right. We have been conditioned as a community to have a party before a purpose. You know, we have been conditioned to have a party before the purpose in the last 40 years. You know what I mean? Because before that, you know, there was some progress and some promise. You know what I'm saying? But there's a great documentary by this guy named Bones from L.A. He's a Blood. He's a Piru. And he had a documentary called The Bastards of the Party. And he was saying that Bloods and Crips are the bastards of the Black Panther Party.
And, yes, I agree.
And he made the point of like, you know, and paraphrasing, but he was saying like, yo, we just were so lost since, you know, the heyday of the civil rights era. And we are just conditioned now for the last 40 plus years to just party it up and live out our pain violently. You know what I'm saying?
And I do. And even if it's not partying, right? Like even I think there's something deeper. It's the sense of like, for example, Jim Jones, which I respect, like, you know, New York legend, but he tried to make the correlation that for being in a fraternity is being the same as a gang. I feel like, my brother, you are being intellectually dishonest. Yeah. They may have started for similar purposes, but their actual missions are completely different, okay? And I think that sometimes we give a pass to things because we feel bad and we're too forgiving. So we're okay. We'll accept it because we're like, you know what? We got to love them no matter what. We got to accept them no matter what. And they're like, yo, not for nothing, but in a lot of communities, shame helps.
Shame. Yeah.
Shame helps. Just go tell, you know, like, let's say, that's why the term crouching tiger mom is a thing, like in Chinese families, because they instill that you got to be like this and don't bring shame to the family.
Right.
Like, yo, some of that has to be brought. In order for us to get it together and to thrive. Yo, I'm sorry. I believe that families should be together. You should try to do it for your kids. Yo, kids have better outcomes having both parents at home.
Of course, absolutely.
Yo, so we have a woman that comes to our home daily to help us out with our youngest. And she was always giving us compliments like, wow, you know, your daughter Lauren is so smart and she's so polite and respectful. And I can tell this because you guys really instill a lot of values and talk to her often. And I tell her like a lot of that has to do with her dad and the way he is as a dad and how she sees how he interacts with me and with them.
You know, accountability is whooping our ass as a community.
Man, accountability.
Accountability, man. You try to tell your homie, hey, man, don't move like that. Hey, man, like, I have a friend of mine who one time he really broke a woman's heart. And I told him, like, yo, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Let her go. Ah, nigga, you know, I'm figuring it out. Yeah, but figure it out on your own. You know what I'm saying? Why are you dragging her down the mud with you? And it's just this idea of, like, if I got to feel it, we all got to feel it. You know what I'm saying?
It's messed up and we got to get out of that. And how is the family supposed to continue to thrive and actually continue for future generations if we don't take care of each other. If we don't try to strive to do the best for our children, if we don't try to be the best role models and to be the best mentors for our kids.
And the reason why we're talking about broken homes and creating accountability, the reason why I use the word party, because I was thinking about Kendrick's song, Watch the Party Die, because guys, at some point, we got to stop partying. And to me, partying could mean I'm leaving this crib to wild out elsewhere and I'll see you when I see you. And at some point, we got to like come together and be more disciplined, because being more disciplined means partying less. And we're still, a lot of us as a community are still partying. We're still partying. It's fucked up. That's where we're at right now. So, when I committed to you, I said to myself in my head, yeah, I still have, you know, mileage on me that I could use to be outside, but I see value in her. And if I party for another 2-3 years, she may not be around no more. And I might not have an opportunity. And I might not have an opportunity to find something as valuable. So I have to know myself now and say, this is discipline. This will require me to really lock in. This urges of being outside and just being a free bird. And, you know, let the party die. You know what I'm saying?
And I also want to say, you know, although we make it look easy, it hasn't been, because we're not perfect people, especially me. Like, I know I put you through a lot. I know I'm not easy.
Likewise.
No, you've been fine. But I know you're like, yeah, I know. You better say that, Kia. No, but really, like, we make it look easy, but yo, this shit is work. And you have to kind of remind yourself of why you even did this in the first place, and that there's a bigger mission, bigger even than you. And that sometimes things are not going to be great, or like, but you still have a mission. You still have a duty to accomplish. And trust me, by remaining consistent, it's going to put you back into that mind frame of, okay, now I remember why I did this. I do love this person. This person is valuable. I love my family. You know, like, I do want this.
I agree. And now with our younger daughter and being special needs, we definitely have to like even turn it up a little bit. So it just magnifies how when life throws you something, you either fold or you lock in more.
You got to lock in. So, especially for your kids, you got to lock in.
Yeah.
And, you know, let me tell you, having a special needs child is especially strenuous to relationships because, you know, statistics shows that you're more likely to get a divorce when you have a special needs child.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, so go ahead.
Go.
No, so I just think that you're absolutely right. Like, we have to lock in even more and put even more work because our child needs us.
You know what? God forbid people out there, they can't go back to being in a relationship or marriage and they break up or divorce or whatever. You still have a duty to be a collaborative parent with the other person.
Yes.
I remember, Mrs. Doubtfire is a funny movie. Shout out to Robin Williams. Rest in peace. Mrs. Doubtfire is a classic movie.
But
I always loved at the end when he, at the last scene, he's doing his show. He's reading a letter. And the letter is a child talking to Mrs. Doubtfire about a divorce that's happening in their family. And how should they grapple with it? And Robin Williams in character, you know, he kind of illustrated how, like, it's okay that your parents are breaking up. Because the idea of family is, as long as you guys work together and spread love with each other, that's the true idea of family anyway. So that movie was what taught you how to embrace the idea of togetherness, even in times of turmoil.
Yeah, but looking back, that mother was problematic because she wasn't trying to let him see the kids. And you know what? She was messed up for that.
Was bitter, but he was wilding out.
But think about how he was wilding out, right? Like, I just think that she was too... She was OD. Like, I'm sorry. Like, she was wrong for that. He should not have to dress up as a woman to see his own kid.
Mind you, his outfit's probably normal today going down to Chelsea.
Oh, my God.
I kid any community. It's all love. But I think in that film, they all had to learn. They all had to grow up, including her. And in the end, she realized, oh, we can still be a collaborative family unit. We just got to work together and be more kind to each other. So that's why I value that movie, because it teaches you about togetherness, even in turmoil.
Side note, another unpopular opinion, or maybe it is popular. I miss family movies because I know that you could say, well, all these Marvel movies are family movies. Yo, I'm sick of Marvel.
I know you are.
I, yo, like, Yo, miss me. I don't care. I want, like, remember Matilda?
Of course.
Mrs. Doubtfire?
Of course.
You know, like, even 13 going on 30 or whatever.
Yeah.
Parent Switch or whatever.
Not Mousetrap. Was it called Parent Trap? Something like that.
Like, I miss family movies. They don't do that anymore.
You know what they say? I think Hollywood studios feel like those movies are not as bankable and profitable, or they're scared to take a risk on that. So they stay with IP, trusted IP. Indiana
Yo,
Jones.
The Goonies. Look Who's Talking. Great movies. You know, I didn't like Daddy Daycare.
Look Who's Talking, the opening scene. That taught me about sperm. Like,
exactly.
Oh, that's how it works. Okay, cool. Let's go. So, you know, I mean, you don't get that no more. You don't get fun family movies like that no more, because I guess the check writers, they're scared to take a risk on that. You know what I'm saying? Which also, in a way, to play devil's advocate, makes me have another unpopular opinion. I think, in the long run, file sharing, internet access, or sharing music and sharing films and downloading illegally, it's hurt us in the long run. I think the old model of paying for certain services, paying for actual movies, not having to be able to be at your fingertips or online easily, it's hurt us, because now the studios are like, I don't want to make a $10 million movie and it gets ripped on LimeWire and then I lost profit on it. I'd rather just make something cheap that's IP ready to be sold to the masses.
The problem is that now what we're banking on is basically reissuing IP that's already been out for 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree.
You know, like, I hear that they're going to remake, oh my God, what was the movie that I just saw they're going to remake? Not Bad Boys.
They're doing a new Final Destination again.
And mind you, Final Destination is still current. It's not old enough. It's not like, for example, the Scarface that we know with Al Pacino, that's actually a remake.
Like a 1920s, right?
Yeah, the original movie's from like the early 90s, but they waited 50 years to remake it. Final Destination was 20 years ago.
Exactly. What are we doing?
Like, come on.
How final can you be if you keep coming back?
Exactly.
You're not final.
And I just think that there's a lack of creativity because there is a fear of failure.
Right. There's a fear of failure. And you know,
they don't want to take risks.
And you know, it's crazy. You say creativity. It seems like there's a lack of creators too lately, you know?
No, I think that there are a lot of creators, but they're not getting a shot. Or a lot of our creators are being outsourced, because let's keep it real. Like, you see, like, the Koreans, they're taking over Hollywood little by little, you know? And also, like, a lot of British actors are taking over a lot of our, you know, the roles too. But let's move on to a different conversation that we were having.
Sure.
Now, this conversation is inspired by the just hilarious situation that happened with the Breakfast Club, where she went online and she said a few things about, you know, how she was unhappy with her workplace, right? And we are not going to talk specifically about that, because I know and you know that that was just a rollout. That was all manufactured so that they could get their eyes on them. However, we did have a valuable conversation when it came to women in the workplace. And is it harder for women to succeed in the workplace?
Well, you are a woman in the workplace, so you have more context to it. But let me just say this. I've always been sympathetic to women in the workplace. I've seen women get harassed. I've seen women tell me, Mike, I feel uncomfortable when so-and-so's around. I feel weird when they're around. I've seen infighting at the workplace with women. I've seen a level of competition. Women being pit against each other. And I feel like I always sympathize with that. When I saw that Breakfast Club incident, it bothered me, because I was like, why are women on the air bickering at each other? Why is a woman the night before on social media airing out dirty laundry because she has a grievance about her job? And then what's making her feel that way? You know what I'm saying? So all that, you know, I'm sympathetic towards, but I ultimately want to ask women, and you're right here in front of me, what is it about the dynamic of a woman at a workplace that creates quote-unquote controversy?
You mean
why do women go through certain unique hardships at work that men are seemingly are not going through at the same rate as far as that?
I just think that obviously Listen, for the same reason we didn't elect a female president, I just think women are second guessed way more. We may be more qualified even in the same roles, but we're going to be second guessed because it's like, oh, she really don't know what she's talking about. You know, we have a natural skepticism about women naturally. And I think that talking about Jess Hilary specifically, she is in radio and she's also a comedian. These are two very male dominated fields, right? And when you look at her counterparts, right, you have Charlamagne and you have Envy. They have both been able to successfully have long marriages with multiple kids. I mean, I believe Envy has like 6 kids. Charlamagne has 4. Right? And they have stay-at-home wives versus Jess, who just had another baby, and it's been a lot more difficult for her. And I think that has to do a lot with the fact that, yo, straight up, and I know, and I'm not trying to start the gender war. I'm really not. But men, male counterparts are not as supportive as a female counterpart. Yo, for a lot of women, they sacrifice family to achieve a certain level of success. And if let's focus on specifically radio, right? Let's name some of the most successful radio personalities, right? We have, let's say, she took over Angela Yee's position. Angela Yee has never been married, does not have any children. We have Angie Martinez. Angie Martinez had 1 son, never married. Wendy Williams has 1 son and was married, but she was in a very violent relationship. And we also have that happen, right? We have somebody like Robin Quivers, who was next to Howard Stern for all those years, never had children. Right now on Hot 97, you have Laura Stiles. She's with a partner and she has 1 child. And I don't think she's going to have any more. So there is a certain level of like, yo, I can't have 4 kids and have a husband at home while I do this. This is too demanding. Why? Because you're not going to have a wife that's going to be like, you know what? Go to work, baby. Go to work and I'll stay home and I'll take care of everything. You don't have to worry about anything. Men don't really operate like that as partners.
I agree. But I will say this, though. I've heard women admit to me that they don't want their man to be home. Some, a very few women, but they don't want their man to be home.
You know why?
What do you say to that?
Okay. I understand it. And I know this is going to sound like a double standard. It's just like, although there are women that can be exploitative and they can take advantage of a man in that situation, I think it is more likely to happen when men stay home. That's not to say that men can't be nurturers, that men can't be caretakers. But occasionally, when we've seen the woman be the quote-unquote financial breadwinner and the man kind of take the steps back, it's been with a price. Like, yo, Ali Wong was married to a doctor, all right? She was married to a doctor. She was the one that was coming up. And then after she gained a lot of success, he left his job to become a full-time manager. Well, 2 years ago, they got a divorce. We look at Mary J. Blige. Her husband was her manager. We saw how that happened. Let's look at Kelly Clarkson. Her husband became her manager. They got a divorce. And she is paying an insane amount of child support and spousal support right now, Kelly Clarkson.
Sherry Shepherd.
Sherry Shepherd. Same situation. She was the breadwinner. The man was kind of took a step back and he depleted her. It was a terrible divorce. So when you hear about these stories, you're a lot more like, hesitant to trust that a man will be able to hold it down. Because there is a need for a man to feel like, I still control this. I'm still the head of household. Which, by the way, you could still be the head of household and not be the breadwinner. But then don't use that as leverage to oppress your partner.
Yeah. I mean, to add to that point, I think men in general nowadays are going through this quote-unquote crisis, crisis where they're trying to figure out, where am I today in the role of the workplace, the workforce? Where am I today as far as the dating scene? How do I flex my manhood? How do I flex my confidence when women are out here working on their own, getting their own cars, their own cribs, their own careers, their own degrees, and they don't need me. They don't need me. A lot of men feel like, she don't need me, so what do I need her for?
Be honest, like, it could possibly also be very emasculating for some men to stay home because they probably get it. It's like that. Like the microaggressions you get from people. Oh, you got it good. You get to stay home while she goes out there and makes the makes the money. Oh, she probably wears the pants in the house. You're probably sick of hearing that. And that kind of emasculates you as a man. You know, you're probably not being emasculated, but because of those things, a lot of things are going on. And I just don't think that right now we're at a place of society where, like, most men can't handle that type of mental position.
How are men, and this is an open question, it's not rhetorical, how are men going to overcome this junction of, where do I fit in this if I'm not the breadwinner? How do we get past it?
Mike, I always tell you, your value to this home is way more than what you make. I mean, yes, you have always made more money than me, right? But that is irrelevant to your what you bring to the house, right? Your contribution to this house is your wisdom, your support, the way that you help me with the kids in the house. Like, to me, that's way more valuable than the money you send me every time you get paid. You know what I'm saying? Yes, money's important, but your value is not based on how much money you give me. Your value is based on, like, yo, you are such an excellent husband, excellent father. You're a great supporter. You help me. That is, you know, like, that is your main number one thing for me, you know? And even then, and even if, let's say, it's not just what you do for me, but it's also who you are as a person. You're a good person. You look out for everybody around you. I see the way you are as a son, the way you are as a brother. You have all these qualities that are wonderful, that are even more important than the money you bring to the table.
Thank you. And I appreciate those words. I wonder, and I had this conversation recently in a roundabout way. I wonder, not to shoot men bail here, but I do wonder, how much does the system of capitalism and finance influence the male psyche? Because, I mean, actually, like, the other day I was talking to my friend, shout out to Jessica at work, and we were talking about this pretty much, this conversation, and we were saying maybe less is more, because do the Amazonian indigenous Venezuelan tribe right now in the Amazonian forest, who don't know about internet, don't know about Xbox, they don't know about Chase Bank and Ferraris, do they go through the same or similar quirks, or because they have less, there's different ideas of how to govern a family, or they have different collaborative goals?
The thing is that, well, we really can't answer those questions because that's not the reality, right? What I can speak upon is this. Studies show that during a recession, one, domestic violence goes up, and other crimes go up. I think that a lot of the male self-worth is attached to their economics, unfortunately. And, yo, even some women, like, I know, you know, I'm going through a period right now where I feel a little bit of type of way about myself because I'm not making the money that I'm used to, let's say. But I can see that happening. Like, a lot of that is tied to a lot of the economics influences our self-worth and how we look at ourselves, especially men. Like, you're told, like, you're supposed to grind. You got to get that bag. And that's why I tell Mike, like, yo, Mike, let me tell you something. Of course, I appreciate the financial contribution you bring to the house. I'll tell you this, though. If you were the type of guy, you were bringing home $300,000 a year, and you, let's say you were paying most of the bills, right? But if you're not the type of guy that would, like, take Lauren to the park, you know, so that I could do homework, or the type of father that will wake up and change Charlie's diaper. Like, there's men that refuse to change diapers. They barely spend time with their kids. They're like, oh, can you wash the kid? Can you? Oh, I got to drop the baby off to my mom because I can't really watch him. Like, there are men that are like that still in 2025. I don't care how much money you make. I will not be able to be with you if you were that way. Right. There's just no way I can handle that. Because I'm like, bro, I didn't sign up to have another child. I'm here to have a partner, somebody that's gonna get down and dirty with me with these kids too.
I agree.
So so I don't care. Honestly, you could make $300,000 a year. If you're not doing all these other things, I don't give a fuck about your money.
I'm with you.
A lot of men that feel like, well, I bring all this money, so I don't have to do all these things. I don't have to help you. And that is where men get it fucked up.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of men will try to, in that position, they'll try to say, well, because my labor is so intense that it makes me to afford this check, I'm now
I do labor too, boo. I do labor too.
I've heard men tell me, yo, man, if I'm paying all the bills, when I come home, food should be on the table. I should be able to kick my feet and people should shut the fuck up and bow to me.
And but the reality is this, only a very, very small percentage of men are able to afford to be the sole breadwinner in the home. Let's keep it real. Most households, you have two adults working.
Especially in New York.
So if the woman is working and the man is working, you can expect her to still continue to be 100% of the house person, and you take a chill pill because, well, I pay the bills, nah, homie. No. And I will fight with my whole chest. I'd rather be by myself than to deal with that. And a lot of women are choosing to be by themselves for that reason.
Absolutely.
A lot of men feel like, well, women are not submissive enough. It's like, no, your grandmother had to be submissive because she had to depend on your grandfather. She had no choice. Women have choices now. And I'm not going to go out with you just because this is the only thing that's available. No, no. Get it together.
Sometimes, you know, you hear people from like the right wing or the lighter skin persuasion people, some. And they talk about the old days, the good old days and the MAGA days. And it's almost like they're reminiscent of, you know, the old ways of living, Jim Crow, slavery. And when I hear that, it reminds you of men who miss the good old days of get back in the kitchen and you can't get a driver's license without me. You can't get a bank account without me.
Can't get a credit card or a bank account without me.
And it's like a lot of people want to live in an archaic state because it made their ego feel better.
Mike, I have a real hot take. Feminism benefits men more than it does women.
How do you figure? I'm with you, but how do you figure?
Financially, women are now pursuing a lot higher paying jobs. So now your income at home is doubling, right? So your lifestyle is a lot better now, right? And also because we're less dependent and we're a little bit more like outgoing, there's a lot of things that we're doing now that I don't need to rely on you for that. And that's okay because it takes the pressure off of you to do that for us. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
But for women, the work has doubled for a lot of women where they're expected to take care of the house and still go out there and make money.
Right.
And still look good and still present herself a certain way.
And I'm going to keep it real with you.
As much as I feel a lot of men, not all men, but a lot of men complain about, oh, women, you're too independent, you're too this. Trust me, you want her. You want her to be independent because you don't want a chick that's hitting you up for everything. Yo, my brother, you have been conditioned. You also benefit from feminism. You also benefit from a woman that believes in equality and also goes and gets it on her own. Believe that. You want a boss woman. You do. You just don't want her to make you feel bad about being a boss. That's all. But trust me, you want the boss chick. You don't want the chick that's needy, that's calling you for everything. Can you do this for me? Can you do that for me? Can you drive me here? Can you do this for me? No, you don't want that either, brother. You don't.
You mentioned grandmothers. You know, a lot of us, we also belittled or devalued the housework that a mother or grandmother did. You know, housework is no slouch. You know, first of all, it's a privilege to go to an office because you get to communicate with other people. Get to share and exchange other people.
And you
people.
Get to take breaks.
They take breaks.
You get vacation time.
Housework is nonstop, you know.
I have a cousin that she stayed home to raise her 5 kids while her husband went out to work. And I tell her, don't ever feel bad about doing that. Because what you're doing way more work. And that's why your children have been able to succeed. Right. Because you have put in the work. You have completely given your life a dedication to make sure that your children are good. Your work is valuable. I cannot stand when people be like, oh, she don't do nothing. She stays home and stays with the kids. I'm like, are you crazy? Do you know how much more work that is?
Absolutely.
I would rather go outside and get a job than stay home and take care of 5 kids. Are you crazy? Do you know how much work that is?
Yo, there's some times where like I'm on vacation, you know, with a school schedule. And by the 4th or 5th day of vacation, I'm like, I'm ready to go back to work. I'm ready to go back to work.
And I think that, you know, as you know, and I consider myself like a feminist, right? Not a man-hating one, because I love men. But feminist in the real, like, yo, we can be equal. That doesn't mean that we get to do the exact same things, because double standards do exist, and I'm aware of that. But what I mean by that is, you recognize my work as valuable as your work. So for example, yeah, you go out to work and you make money, but yo, if I decide to stay home and take care of the kids, that's just as valuable. Yo, fellas, if your woman is home raising your two kids and she decided, I'm going to give up my career to raise our children, you better bow down and kiss her feet, because you have no idea how important it is to have a parent at home that's a nurturer and a caretaker. And also, your children are more likely to succeed when having a mother at home. They're going to have much more emotional intelligence. They're going to be able to concentrate better in school. They're a lot more confident, I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is a privilege, and you should bow down to her.
I agree. We're at almost 90 minutes, so let's transition to another topic you want to talk about. You have unpopular hip-hop takes.
But one of my unpopular hip-hop takes, I already said it about Tupac, Yeah. I'm sorry. The West Coast, y'all could come for me, but I just feel like y'all need to stop prepping him like he's some West Coast god. Okay, he was a digital underground in the Bay for the first few years of his career, and then he signed to Death Row. But do you consider him a West Coast artist?
I don't.
I think he's been marketed that way. And I think that he did encompass a sound, especially at the latter end of his career, that was a lot more West Coast. But when you look at the actual scope of his whole career, like, no, I wouldn't say he's a West Coast artist.
Well, you know, Tupac fed the male ethos of tough guy, ash, you know, what 50 Cent did in 2003, leading with hate, leading with beef, leading with controversy. That was Pac in 96. You know what I'm saying? It was the same tactics used, more or less. And men love that. People love that. Women love it, too. Like that. Take charge. Fuck you. Sensical. I'm going to be brash. You know, I'm going to spit in the camera. Even though I may have sexually assaulted a woman, or was at least unkind to a woman at a hotel room, or not be careful for her.
Which is controversial. Some people to this day say that he didn't do that.
Yeah, allegedly.
But again, this goes back to our first conversation when we were talking about how we'll accept anything, like how people be, you know, copping pleas for R. Kelly to this day, you know. Right now, people are copping pleas for Kanye, which is crazy.
Crazy.
Yo, if you're still, struggling defending Kanye right now, you are a moron.
Yeah, because he is telling you how he feels about you.
Yeah.
You know, man, the R. Kelly thing. R. Kelly,
We're not going to go to R. Kelly. Yeah, we're not going to go to R. Kelly. Unpopular take, you see, because I just mentioned Kanye. Okay, Kanye does have a great discography. He does.
I guess.
But when you go back to a lot of the early stuff, a lot of the stuff has not aged well. Like, can you listen to Gold Digger nowadays?
Oh, I can't. I can't. Well, for me, my favorite album of his is Graduation.
Of course you do. Of course.
But no, a lot of
can you listen to slow jams right now? Yo, I can't even listen to Through the Wire. I can't stand the chipmunk beats. A lot of his stuff, if you really go back and listen, I'm like, oh yeah, this is dated.
He found his best pocket from 07 Graduation to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Oh my God, I love that album.
So that was his pocket, those 3-4 years. But I get you. I'm with you on that. Kanye, he's weird.
My next take, Lil Wayne ain't never been the greatest rapper. He ain't even top 20. Yeah. He ain't even top 20. And I say that with my whole chest.
Yeah. The Wayne obsession. Wayne
never liked him.
Wayne don't say anything. He's talented. He can rap. He can rap.
Yeah,
rap.
He's talented. But no, he's never. I can barely understand him. He don't have the catalog to be the greatest rapper.
I don't connect with his music deeply. You know what I'm saying? Nope. It's very surface level. So, you know, I agree with you there. Shout out to Jeff. He always says that too. Like, Lil Wayne's overrated. He's very overrated. But to a generation, that's their icon. So it is what it is. And you can't fight a generation's viewpoint about how they idolize somebody. Yeah.
What are your unpopular hip-hop takes?
My unpopular hip-hop take was, you can disregard everything in rap pre-86. You could just throw it away.
Mind you,
I love Houdini. I love
Run DMC, Mike.
Run DMC, there's always an exception to a rule. There's always an exception to a rule. All the
look, boys and girls, you don't. What about the message? The message was 82.
Okay, unpopular opinion. I'm glad you mentioned unpopular opinion. I will listen to "Can't Nobody Hold Me Down" by Puff Daddy way more than the message.
Wow, than the message.
I will listen to way more. Like the message. Broken glass everywhere. I don't need it. I don't need it in my life.
Come here, little boys and girls, about this game.
Ain't no sad. You know what? The Fresh Prince, Will Smith, he is like the modern version of that era. Come on, everybody, boys and girls, clean your room.
You need to finish school and read some books.
Clean your room. It's up to your dad.
Yeah, it's messed up that we're making fun of, like, clean rap. Because in the reality, we've been so conditioned and so freaking... We've been conditioned. And rap originally is supposed to be positive, right? But, yo, my man, you didn't like Planet Rock by Afrika Bambaataa? That's one of the best...
From a dance aspect...
Amazing song.
I like it a lot. But I just don't think we needed it. Or maybe we didn't need it.
Without that song, we don't get freestyle.
Right. The maturation it was beneficial, I guess. But
let me ask you something. Something I realized recently. I'm like, yo, do black people like fuck with freestyle music?
You did or you do, but it ain't like Puerto Ricans.
Yo, and Italians.
And Italians. Like they love
their freestyle music.
Yeah, they love the love song that's freestyle, like they will.
If I take you home. Would you still be in love, baby?
What's that song over the weekend?
Take me in your arms.
Let me
go. Oh, that's my song. And I'm not Puerto Rican, but I can appreciate some freestyle. But I was a baby when freestyle was at its height. So I don't have that same attachment to it as some of my cousins who are older. They love freestyle. Uncle, he loves freestyle.
That's an 80s thing to the core.
It's an 80s thing for sure.
Every Puerto Rican on my timeline was just playing that same song over and over again. I was like, all right, I get it. I get it.
That song is fire, though.
It is fire. Another unpopular opinion that I have about hip hop, and this is a legend. This is a legend with a big nose legend.
I know who you're going to say.
Yo, I do not care about KRS-One's music or legacy. Mind you, I like 9mm. They love a few songs here and there. But if his career was like Thanos, like snapped away and non-existent, it wouldn't bother me at all. Like, I don't, the old heads, like from the 80s, they'll tell you, who's my top five? They'll say, KRS, Rakim. No, they'll say Rakim, Big Daddy Kane. KRS, number one. KRS, number one. I'm like, why? Why is KRS up there for y'all? I don't get it. What happened to that?
Knowledge reigns supreme over nearly everyone.
I don't care.
And he introduced reggae to the hip-hop sphere in a way.
I listen to his protege way more, DJ. Be nice. I listen to those records way more, but... You know, don't get me wrong, I like Boogie Down Productions, We'll Always Get Paid. You know, I like a few songs here and there, but I just don't care overall. I don't get the KRS-One obsession.
I love Step Into the World. I ain't gonna lie, I love that song.
Yeah, I just don't, get it. He's the last of the, he's very like.
I'm a teacher.
I'm entertainment. I'm like, all right.
We're gonna go to hell. We're gonna go to hell for this.
Listen. Your Uncle Ray's probably like, what the hell? But yeah, but now, that's my hot take.
And the reason why you don't have any more hot takes?
One more hot take. People don't like when I say this. Well, but my first take is not hot take. I do believe Biggie Smalls is the greatest rapper I ever heard in my life. The best MC.
That's not more a hot take. That's the reality.
That's a reality. But I think my hottest take. My hottest take, and people don't like when I say this, if you listen to it sonically, this is where you understand Diddy is a genius. Sonically. I think Life After Death is the best mixed, best sonically, best engineered, best produced rap album ever heard. If you listen to the album, the beats, the first songs, Somebody Gotta Die, if you just mute the voice, listen to the sonics, listen to the production, from the first song to the last song, it just sounds so rich and crispy and beautiful. You know, people try to say, oh, The Chronic is produced well, whatever. That's all good and dandy. I think Life After Death is, to me, the best rap album I ever heard in my life, and also the best produced rap album. That's my hot take. Go with it, how you feel.
I mean,
you, there was an Illmatic, Illmatic. Oh, another one. Illmatic is overrated.
Which, tell them your other take about Nas.
Nas, I think It Was Written is Nas's best work, period. I think he had to crawl in Illmatic, and he ran with It Was Written. I think It Was Written,
he had to crawl with it.
Listen, Illmatic, it was a moment in time. But if someone today, if Joey Badass made Illmatic today, with the same beats, the same rhymes, he would say, okay, that's cool, Joey.
Because we've already heard it.
Maybe there's that. But listen to, like, One Time for Your Mind, One Time.
That's the exception. That's the exception. But all the other songs are, like, incredible.
There's a few songs on
there. It was so incredible that even Jay-Z sampled it for A Reasonable Doubt.
I understand. But, yo, it's not better than Ready to Die. Ready to Die, to me, is cinematic.
I love
cinematic.
Ready to Die. I fucking love that album.
Ready to Die is cinematic. You can see a movie.
It is a movie. But you know what? Doggy Style is a movie. Doggy Style is a movie.
If you're on a beach.
You can literally close your eyes and picture it.
If you're on a beach and the plane about to crash, knock on wood. Because lately, planes been crashing. Knock on wood. Your plane crashes on a beach. And you see your album CD booklet, that old, is being washed away. You got to grab it. What are five albums you got to take with you to the island to have for the rest of your life on the beach?
Yeah.
For me, it's going to be Life After Death, Ready to Die. We're talking rap. Life After Death, Ready to Die. Doggy Style's up there. Going away, maybe Midnight Marauders by Tribe. And the fifth one, I don't know. But I know.
You're going to put in probably Blueprint.
You know, Blueprint hasn't aged well with me as much as I thought it would. Black Album has aged better with me than Blueprint. Black Album has.
I enjoyed Black Album more when it came out. But Blueprint is slightly better than Black Album for me.
I'm mad at that.
Now,
because... It Was Written.
Go ahead. Now, for me, because we're talking about hip-hop right now, I have a hot take. Okay, so because Mike and I go out a lot to, like, comedy shows. And we see a lot of, like, comedians, clearly. So comedy and music is very much a marriage. So a lot of comedians have a DJ, right? I have a pet peeve. I am tired of listening to the same backpack rap DJ playlist before comedians come on. And it's so predictable. Like, I'm literally there with Mike. I'm like, they're going to play Tribe now. They're going to play Wu-Tang now. Okay, here comes Nas. Here comes Talib. Here comes Common.
It's
the same thing. It's like, oh, they'll play the original sample and then the hip-hop version. It's like, bro, I heard Clark Kent do this like 15 years ago.
Questlove do it. Same thing years ago, yep.
Years ago. Like, for me, it's like, don't be so predictable. And what does it say about rap when we are still playing certain records from 30 years ago? Why are we not using records that were made even 10 years ago? Why is that?
We're stagnant.
Why is that?
We're stagnant as a culture. We are stagnant.
I agree. And it's one of the reasons why I feel like Drake was able to have the career that he's had, because in reality, there was no other force to kind of come in and really counteract or actually counter his movement. There's always been consistently a brand new sound every 15 years. You know, in the Bronx, most people know the Bronx for the beginning of hip hop. But 10 years before hip hop, salsa started in the Bronx.
Salsa, yeah.
You know, and then 10 years after hip hop, freestyle came to the mix. You know, and there's always been something that's been brewing. But there hasn't been anything new. This hasn't been anything inspiring. We're still milking the cow of hip hop. And what is hip hop now? It is almost indescribable now. I can't even distinguish it now. Like, what is it?
That milk is bone dry right now. And you ask young kids today, what's hip hop to them? A lot of times they tell me, oh man, it's just vibes. We're just chilling now. Stop thinking too much. I'm like, yo, art is supposed to mean something to you. No. Art should matter to you.
And in reality, I mean, hip-hop is music of the rebellious. And in a way, you're still having people that are rebelling against the system use hip-hop. But I feel like a lot of people are just using this as a vehicle to make money. They're not doing it for artistic expression. And a lot of the artists have become sellouts.
Absolutely. I agree.
which has been one of the biggest, like, disappointments, right? When you see all of these rappers that have come from a lot of impoverished backgrounds, then come in and endorse stupid shit, that's where I'm like, oh, yeah, hip-hop is absolutely dead. Nas was right. He was just about, like, 15 years too early.
The chase of commerce will have you disregard what's true to you. You know what I mean?
And if you think about it, the most successful rappers still are people that are very tied to the artistic expression. You look at somebody like Kendrick, very successful. J. Cole is still very successful. Yeah. You know, people that are really putting in that work and are committing to, like, high level, you know, artistry are still very successful. But it does suck that there hasn't been anybody that's came out in the last 5 years that has really dominated the genre.
You mentioned J. Cole. Can I give you one final popular opinion?
Oh my God, here we go.
Not about J. Cole. It's not about J. Cole. But you mentioned him at Triggers. My last unpopular opinion is very, it's going to be very controversial. It's going to go against the, it's going to go against the male ego. Battle records and diss records are ultimately a big waste of time. Battle rapping and infighting, it's a big waste of music studio time. What I mean by that is, I feel like it's very rare that a battle record deserves an album placement on an album. That's real estate. You got to put on track 2, track 5, whatever. It's very rare where a song is that quality that's it's a battle record that's worthy of being on an album. Most battle songs you hear or diss records, they're not, it's not really worth it. You know what I mean? That's one. Two, I feel like it's a waste of time because it's preaching division and fighting more than digging into your own soul and creating art. I ultimately feel like as much as it's enjoyable to nitpick and fight and to bicker each other, I feel like ultimately it's just a waste of time. Mind you, I enjoy Not Like Us. I'm still dancing. Sorry,
I think
Dre.
It definitely takes, I think battling is part of hip hop. So it does bring excitement. It does bring a level of like nostalgia. However, the way that it takes up a lot of space in people's catalogs. I think, yeah, it does take up space. And also, you know, somebody like Drake, you know, who is suing now, essentially because he lost a battle. I think, like, now it's time to put away battle records to the end. Like, it's
let it go. Like, it's...
Because some people can't handle it, clearly.
You know, like, he's been dead for 30 years, but, you know, look at somebody like Tupac. We all champion Hit 'Em Up. Not all. I don't.
Not me. But I hate that record.
Like, me too. I hate it too. But do you really want something like that in your legacy? Mm-hmm. In your legacy? That viciousness? Like, at some point, we got to let it go. Let it go. Let the hate go. Let that angst go. It's not.
If you notice, Nas doesn't perform Ether.
Exactly.
He doesn't perform Ether.
It would seem childish to perform Ether or take over now. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, it's very immature, in my opinion. But that's my hot take about that.
So before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to cover?
No.
While you have me here?
Off the top of my head, no, I don't. I agree with you about comedy. I think that, unfortunately, I would say comedy and hip-hop have been too tied together lately. And like you said, it leaves for an opening of no creativity, but just like laziness. And I'm over it like you. Overall, I also want to say, before I go, I'm interested in the next four years, because it's been, what, 2-3 months since we had a new president or a president returned back in office. And yeah, and you're seeing all this dysfunction in the last 2 months already. It's like leaks of text messages of war happening, you know, institutions breaking down, services breaking down. It's like, yo, it's so early, planes crashing. You know, people begin fire left and right, and then you've seen the dysfunction of the firing. You're seeing already in 2 months how a lot of, and deportations, you see people who thought, like, I thought I wouldn't be deported. I'm one of the good ones. You know, I pay taxes. I'm a good person. I thought I wouldn't be deported. I'm interested in seeing the next 4 years turn out, because I don't want to say I told you so. But I do want to say, guys, your vote matters. Your inaction matters. Your lack of knowledge on the matters that you care about matter. And what you did this time may have longer lasting effects than you even realize.
I think that there's no such thing as being apolitical. I think when you say you are apolitical, it just means that you're okay with having other people make the decisions for you, period. Or you're just going to look away while things are happening. I think that COVID did a big number on us, right? You would think that something like COVID, a pandemic, would bring us more together. And no, it actually made us shred ourselves to pieces. Why? You know, we couldn't come together without the vaccine. The vaccine divided a lot of us because a lot of people felt like, okay, well, my body, my choice. I don't want to do it. And some people felt like in order for us to move forward, we need to do it, right? And whatever you side you're on, fine. But that divided us, right? Obviously, the economics of the pandemic also divided us, right? Some of us got to stay home and work from home. Some of us had to actually work and go outside and risk ourselves. And then there's some people that committed fraud and applied for a bunch of loans that they now had to pay for. A lot of us had to become the teachers for our children while our children stayed home, and we saw how it impacted our children, et cetera, et cetera. I think it just made us a lot more hateful. And I think that in the time of economic despair, which, by the way, was not just felt in this country, but worldwide, I think people feel the need to kick the guy that's littler than you. I think a lot of people got filled with hate. And because of that, that person is in charge again. And I think that we need to stop being emotional and start being more intellectually together, united, and focus on what matters. I can't control right now who is the president, but I can control my actions. I can control what happens in my house. And no matter what, I gotta keep striving. But at the same time, like, you cannot be ignorant. If you voted that way, you can't be ignorant to the fact that you don't care. You have to say, like, okay, I chose this side and I am being selfish about what the side that I chose. And that's just how I believe in it. I feel like that's what you chose. And when it comes down to it, when you're sitting down 30 years from now, you're talking to your grandchildren are going to ask you about this. I can't wait. I cannot wait.
I can't wait either. And when the grandkids ask me, I'm a quote Shaggy. It wasn't me.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't me. But on that note, thank you everybody for tuning in.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Shout out to you, Kia, for joining me on this program, on this platform. Hopefully we do it again soon. I feel like we still have meat on the table. Pause. I'm still learning as a man. So I'm sorry. Pause is something that is hard for me to let go.
Listen, I'm a New Yorker. We're part of the pause game. We do the pause game.
That's Cam's contribution, him and Dame. But anyway, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. I value your opinion and your thoughts. I
think likewise.
This is a great conversation, and I'm sure in the near future we'll do it again. Until next time, y'all be good, y'all be blessed, and you're the host technically, so you have to end it.
Okay, great. So thank you so much, and everybody for staying this long. Thank you for having me, Mike. I appreciate you. Much success on the break room, and peace out, y'all.
Peace out. Later.